Hi, Yuri Lepstein here, and this is the Renew Democracy Initiative audio newsletter. This week in Democracy, critical race theory. Just bringing it up is divisive. But what exactly is it? After that, Democratic congressional leaders are pushing for electoral reform as state-level Republicans are pushing their own measures to overhaul how elections are run. But some of the states lagging behind in implementing best practices might surprise you. Here's why you should care. So, what actually is critical race theory? Well, it depends who you ask. If you ask Senator Ted Cruz, he'll tell you that it's a mode of thought which holds that America is fundamentally racist, that all white people are racists, and that whites and blacks hate each other, and have to hate each other. But if you had turned on PBS last week, you'd have heard Judy Woodruff describe it as simply a way of thinking about America's past and present by looking at the role of systemic racism. Now, a more precise definition of critical race theory is that it's an academic concept originating in the late 1970s and early 80s among legal scholars. Gary Peller, a critical race theorist and law professor at Georgetown, described it as the diverse work of a small group of scholars who write about the shortcomings of conventional civil rights approaches to understanding and transforming racial power in American society. He added that even law students find the ideas challenging. That's critical race theory. It's complicated, nuanced, and academic. But public officials have politicized the concept, intentionally lied about what it is, and distorted the definition so much that the pursuit of truth has become nearly impossible. So how do these very different definitions of critical race theory drive division? Since partisans can't agree on a single definition, each side talks past the other. When a progressive Democrat and a conservative Republican talk about critical race theory, they are talking about two different things entirely. Imagine a politician says that they support critical race theory. To someone who learned the term from Fox News, that politician just went on the record in support of telling white school children that they are the irredeemable beneficiaries and perpetrators of racism. A CNN viewer, on the other hand, might walk away believing that the politician was only suggesting that we should acknowledge the enduring legacy of racism in this country. One could go even further and imagine a debate between two people who both believe that the legacy of racism in America should be taught in schools, but that schools shouldn't go so far as to teach everything through the lens of oppressor and oppressed. These two people actually agree on substance. But if they have wildly different definitions of critical race theory, they could find themselves completely at odds. Our national discourse suffers when words take on different meanings for different people, making it more difficult to find common ground and compromise. So, what can we do from here? Well, both sides should honestly give an inch. The left should relegate terms like critical race theory to the college classroom where they originated. Defending the term, rather than shifting the conversation to concrete action, is self-defeating. It should also avoid the patronizing, reductionist rhetoric of some anti-racists like Robin DiAngelo, and acknowledge that some leading historians do dispute certain elements of the 1619 Project. Meanwhile, the right should stop calling everything it doesn't like critical race theory. This effort to resist all curricular changes in schools, even when they're necessary, is clearly in bad faith. Almost half of Americans don't believe that the Civil War was fought over slavery, and many have never heard of the Tulsa Race Massacre. That's a serious problem, and it needs to be addressed. With our nation's communal ties increasingly fraying, we should focus less on debating arcane academic terms and more on making changes that will help Americans of all backgrounds understand and empathize with one another. Everyone would be better off for it, especially those from historically marginalized groups. Returning to our other story, voting rights have been in the news a lot lately, and for good reason. voting can be difficult in America. In one particularly challenging state, you aren't allowed to vote early, you can't register to vote on election day, you need a state-approved excuse to vote absentee, and you must produce a voter ID. Of course, we're talking about the notorious cradle of voter suppression, Delaware. That's right. The president's home state lacks some of the measures which even Georgia's much maligned new voting law preserves. Though President Biden branded Georgia's new voter laws as Jim Crow in the 21st century. And Delaware isn't the only state with Democratic leadership that's failing to live up to the party's ideals. Now, that said, it's still easier to vote in Delaware than in Georgia. And on average, it's easier to vote in blue states than in red states. According to the Election Law Journal, the top 17 most difficult states to vote in are all controlled by Republicans. But without establishing clear principles about what exactly constitutes a free and fair election, many are bound to disregard Democratic criticisms as one-sided. So, what could these principles look like? We would include four key components, although this is not by any stretch of the imagination an exhaustive list. First, expand access to early in-person voting for at least the 2 weeks before an election. Second, automatically register eligible residents to vote. Third, allow changes to a voter's registration on election day. And fourth, expand polling locations and hours to minimize long lines and wait times. To allay Republican concerns about potential voter fraud, Democrats might even consider passing voter ID laws while also automatically providing a free, state-issued identification card to every adult resident. Now, to be clear, the measures that some Republican legislators are proposing do limit certain key groups' voting rights. One example is Georgia's attempt to end early voting on Sunday mornings, as if it were somehow less secure than voting on other days of the week, and not, in fact, related to the Souls to the Polls events organized by black churches. It should be especially concerning that the same people drafting these bills are the ones pushing the big lie that the 2020 presidential election was stolen. Now, at the moment, it looks like national legislation on voting isn't a real possibility. But if we're serious about improving voting rights in America, there are clear steps we can take. And here at RDI, we certainly hope that we do.